Good afternoon, Lumpur.
Good afternoon, Ajahn Chivico.
Well, today is June 17th, 2026. And as many people will know in our monastic circles, today we celebrate the birthday of your teacher, our teacher, Lumpur Cha. I was wondering if you'd like to take this opportunity and maybe share a few memories or some reflections which come to mind today.
Yes, well, it's a very good day to reflect on Lumpur Cha. I found him a very charismatic personality and who had a very loving presence. And when I first met him in 1967, he was 48 years old. He's still fairly young. And Wat Pho Po was a relatively unknown monastery in Thailand because it's in the northeastern province of Ubon. And it was more of a backwater at the time in 1967. So he was not known in Bangkok or abroad. And now in 2026, he's one of the most famous Buddhist monks in the world. And there are many famous Buddhist monks and worthy of great respect, but his teaching was very direct and practical. So it wasn't just a kind of technique he taught us. It was an attitude. So I'd been through various techniques before I met Lumpur Cha. And when I've first met Ajahn Cha, I was kind of dreading he'd give me another technique, some technique that the individual monks have discovered helpful to them. But he didn't. And I really wanted to be under a teacher who was could teach me the Vinaya. And I heard he was very strict, but he wasn't kind of rigid. And so he made Vinaya very attractive. You know, so it was very strict, and we learned all the rules and the minor rules. And I was quite willing to submit to these rules because I'd been kind of a rebel against such things as rules and commandments and teachings that kind of always talking about morality and discipline, and I didn't find that very attractive. But with Lumpur Cha, I deliberately wanted to train myself, to humble myself, learn how to bow properly, how to conduct myself as a Buddhist monk in Thailand. Because even though I'd been in Thailand over a year, I didn't really know, nobody taught me, or any teachings came my way. I had books, which I found very helpful, but I taught myself. But one of my insights was I needed a teacher who I had to bow to, had to learn from, and not just put up with. And it wasn't just a technique, as I've said before, but an attitude he taught that I found, rather than making life difficult made life much more easy for me. And I have developed within 6 months with Lumbar Cha, I had confidence in my knowledge of Vinaya to function in Thailand in a proper way. But his main teaching was around the Four Noble Truths, which is my favorite teaching. As you all know, it's a teaching that I investigated backwards, forwards, sideways, above and below, in every aspect, just to see how, where it would take me, where would this teaching that the Buddha gave to his five colleagues after enlightenment. And so I wondered why he taught there's dhamma, there's dukkha or suffering. And this fascinated me because most religions insist you believe in God and love and more inspiring things. Suffering is not inspiring. And we tend to seek happiness and love and kind of happy states of mind, positive, inspiring states of mind, where Ajahn Chah emphasized the suffering. And of course, this was the Buddha's first teaching, was the first noble truth, is there is suffering. And this is a very good statement. There is, it's not. Suffering is ultimate reality, but to understand suffering rather than just seek happiness and tranquility for yourself. As long as there's a separate sense of self, that we never question or understand, then we never know why we suffer. But his teaching was very direct to look at suffering. And of course, in the situation I was in, having to learn Thai language and live under precepts, some that didn't, you know, on an intellectual level, didn't seem to be very important. But it wasn't about whether I considered them important or not. I began to see how, if I personally had an attitude of this is unimportant or ridiculous precept, I could at least be aware that this is my critical mind judging an ancient tradition. And so I didn't trust that. I didn't trust that I, as an individual person, was that wise to make judgments about things like the First Noble Truth. And I did suffer a lot in terms of physical discomfort and adjusting to a whole different way of life that I never expected to experience. But Lumbar Cha's teaching was to observe the mind, observe the suffering, the anger. He didn't say, don't get angry or greedy or anything, but it was like when greed arises, you know, there's that wisdom within each one of us to know that greed has arisen. When anger arises, we have that kind of wisdom to know that anger has arisen, and they arise and cease according to conditions, other conditions. So that made sense because I admired Wat Bapong as a monastery and Lumbar Cha and the Sangha monks that assembled there. You know, I thought they were very admirable individuals. And I never thought of leaving, actually. Just my previous way of life was more very kind of American middle class, take it easy kind of life, where my life in the early years at Wat Rapong was learning to eat food I didn't like and sleep on just a grass mat, not a expensive mattress, and put on my robes and follow the discipline that was taught there. So I look back and I feel nothing but gratitude. I don't actually remember suffering, even though I know I suffered. I just feel an intense gratitude to Lumpa Cha and the Buddha and setting up conditions where people like myself from a different place, a different time, different culture could actually join and participate and learn and develop with wisdom rather than with personal problems, personal identities, personal ambition. So he passed away in 1992, so that's 108 years ago?
I believe his birthday was 108 years ago. Ajahn Chah was how old? 33? So 33 years ago.
33 years ago.
Yeah.
Sorry about that.
Get our numbers mixed up.
Edit that out.
I'm glad we sorted that out. Do you remember your first interaction with Lumpur Cha when you arrived at Wat Rapong?
I do. It's rather embarrassing.
Then we'd love to hear it.
It took quite a few hours to travel from Nong Khai to Ubon. And by the time I arrived in front of Lung Po Cha, I had to pee. So it was very embarrassing. He let me use his facility and his kuti.
But it would have been some time till you were actually able to have a conversation with him as you were learning
the language. There were two Thai monks who could speak English.
Mm.
And they accompanied me so that we had translations.
Mm.
So I went through the first meeting translated by these two Thai monks.
And that's when you intuitively felt that that would be the right place for you to spend some time and train?
Yeah, I felt very, right from the beginning, I felt very impressed with the monastery in Lumpa Cha. I'd been to many famous teachers before him, but I never felt any great attraction to any of them, like personal attraction. Mm. But with Lumpa Cha, I felt that. I felt a kind of personal attraction to him. Like I felt a level of trust that just comes intuitively, not through actual experience. So I call that intuitive. It's not particularly rational, but Why didn't it arise with the others who were famous and trusted and great teachers in Thailand at the time, when I didn't have that intuitive sense with them? I liked them. I wasn't critical of them, but I felt a kind of trust and oneness with Lumpur Cha.
And was it also the example of the detail he put towards community living, which was also attractive to you?
Yes. Yes, it was like we all had to work together. At that time, Wat Bapong was very basic. No electricity, no. You had to draw water from the well. There was no kind of water system in the monastery. So you meet every afternoon at 3 o'clock, and every monk had to be there. He was a senior and a junior to seminaries to draw water from the well. They use these empty kerosene tins that were on a rope, and they'd lower into the well, and then it took quite a few months to pull them up. And then we'd transfer them onto bamboo poles where we were two monks, one in front, one in back, with the bamboo pole over the shoulders, carrying these buckets of water to distribute to the kitchen, to the bathing areas, every day. So it was, since I was much taller than the Thai monks, I always was on the back of the bamboo pole.
With a water bucket sliding towards you or away from you. So this style of practice would have been much different than the, as you started as a novice in solitude, a lot of the time you moved into the community life. Can you share some maybe more personal experiences where you found this was benefiting your growth in Dhamma, being in a community rather than alone in a kuti?
Well, I liked being alone in a kuti. I didn't find that difficult. But it's interrelations with other people that I've found greed, hatred, delusion arises. So I have a very critical mind. So it's, when I'm alone in the kuti, there's nothing to criticize. So where I stayed in Nong Khai, they brought food to me every morning, every day. And they were very polite and helpful, but I didn't have to live with them really. But they didn't teach me anything about Vinaya. So one time in Nong Khai, I was invited to a layman's house for a dana, and I was a samanera, and I had no idea of how to conduct myself in a layman's house. And I just felt so clumsy and embarrassed because, I'm tall and, I'm taller than the Thai monks. And so it's just, how do I sit? And eat from sitting on the floor, proper manners about the social etiquette that the Vinaya teaches us. I didn't know anything about what to do. And I found the whole thing, the people were understanding, but I felt so clumsy and ill-informed. That's one of the reasons why I wanted to learn proper procedure for, as it was expected of a good monk in Thailand. So I feel comfortable when I would be invited to laymen's homes or informal situations.
Is there any other teachings that pop up to mind or incidents that you shared with Lumpur Cha through your years of living at Wat Pa Phong?
Well, after a year or so, I wanted to be alone. So I asked permission to go Tudong alone by myself, and Lumpur Cha wouldn't let me go. And so, because I found, I remembered my blissful experiences in Nong Khai, and I wasn't getting any of them in Wat Pa Phong. And so I thought, if I'm alone, then I'll have them again. So I requested to go by myself to this a refuge in the top of the Phupek Mountain in Sukhumvit Province, northern Thailand, which I'd visited before. And it was a very beautiful spot. Phupek Hill or mountain was the highest peak in the Phupen range of mountains in that part of Thailand. And it had an ancient Khmer palace, ruins of a palace or a monastery there. So it's become a sightseeing spot now, but back then it was relatively lost in the jungles. And so I went to finally, Lumpur Cha gave me permission to go. And he had very grand gestures. They took me to the Warin train station. He came with me to the train station along with most of the other monks who were that time living at Wat Pa Phong. And as I got on the train, I was looking out the window. There was Lumpur Cha and all these monks paying respect to me as I was about to leave them. I saw smiles on their faces. And Lumpur Cha told me to come back for the pansa. So I had that glowing memory as I traveled to Phupek Mountain. And that was the worst 6 months of my monastic life. I was expecting bliss again, and there was a cyclone that nearly blew my kuti off the cliff. Mm-hmm. One of the monks, there were two Thai monks living with me. One of them I felt such aversion toward, I became obsessed with anger and trying to get rid of it, trying to you know, to be have loving kindness. But the more I try to feel loving kindness for this monk, the more angry I get. And it's not that he really did anything very bad. Mm. And we, and it took quite a while because Pupek had a very rickety kind of wooden staircase up part of the mountain. And you had to go down Bindabat, the alms food, every morning at dawn. You'd go down this rickety wooden staircase, and to the base of the hill, there was a shelter, like a tin roof shelter, where lay people, village people would come and give us food. And then after the ceremony, blessing the lay people, we'd climb back up the mountain. And it was about 11 o'clock by the time we got up to re-eat our meal on top of Pupak Mountain. And it was hot weather, so sometimes we'd spread the mats out in the open on top of the mountain and sit there and eat our meals from our alms bowls. And there was a lot of communists in the area at the time. And a helicopter from the nearby town flew over us and saw these strange-looking monks having their meal on top of Pupak Mountain. And about an hour or so later, the police came and arrested me. So they took me down the mountain again to the local police station and interviewed me. And they decided, they realized I wasn't a dangerous threat to Thailand. So they let me go back. And then I caught malaria on top of this mountain. Mm. And I was really sick with high fevers. And the village men came up the mountain and carried me down on this rickety wooden staircase and put me in a shelter by a reservoir. And it was hot season. This shelter was just a tin roof. And it wasn't, you know, even my height. So I was kind of lying under this tin roof like I was being cooked alive with the heat. And all these flies and gnats kept flying in my mouth and my eyes. And I had this high fever and then the local food with a lot of chilies and I couldn't eat it. Mm-hmm. And so I thought, I'm going to die here, and I'm going to just die somewhere in lost in the jungles of Thailand, and then I could hear airplanes flying overhead, and one of my friends from the Peace Corps, Bob Schmidt, had moved to Vientiane, where he had a very nice apartment teaching English at the university in Laos. Mm. And I thought, I could be there in Vientiane in a nice flat. And I started feeling sorry for myself and anger at the gnats and the flies and the food. And then an inner voice said to me, literally it said, shut up and sit up straight and watch your breath. Where did that come from? So I did that. And within a few days, I was normal. And within a week, I went back up to the top of Poopek Hill. And it was getting close to Punsa time. So I decided to go back to Wat Pampo. And my robes were in tatters. Even the patches were had to be patched. So I go back to Wat Pampo and they don't have a cootie for me. And my robe is an absolute disgrace. And the Poncho just laughs. And so the monks kindly made me a new robe. And I stayed in a building that was with shared the building with one room with about five other monks. And I was so glad to be back. I didn't care where they put me anywhere they want. Because suddenly I felt a security, physical security and harmony that Wat Pampo monks emanated. And so I didn't complain about living in this place with five other monks. And by the time of the Wasa started, the Punsa started, they found me a cootie. But it was an incredible lesson because I had idealized this living alone on top of a mountain. You know, it's kind of a monastic dream, you know, where you have insight and bliss and understanding and then at the top of a mountain or in a cave, mountain cave. But for me, it was utter hell. So I gave up daydreaming about ideal places to go. And after that, there were more Westerners coming to Ubon, so they were, by that time I'd learned Thai well enough to translate, so I could became a trainer of Western monks, which I didn't like.
Well, thank you very much for sharing some stories with us, Lumpur. And we'll do this again soon. I have another question and answer session.